Let me introduce myself. My name is Dáithí Downey. I work at Dublin City Council. We run the Dublin Housing Observatory, which is a reasonably new adventure. It's about policy, research, knowledge exchange, ideas about housing. Working closely with our colleagues in planning, economic development as well, on matters of inclusion, integration, economy, and of course housing being the centrepiece of all of this. Delighted to welcome you all here this morning again.
Housing is about homes, places where people live, where families grow up. So it's not so much bricks and mortar, but the building blocks of belonging. And in a public conversation about something that can seem very dry and numbers driven, like housing and housing policy, it's critical for us to keep that in mind's eye, to know always that we're talking about people and the very essence of their lives. I'm Helen Shaw, the producer and presenter of a podcast project called This Is Where We Live, exploring how we shape and create great places to live. And this is a special short series showcasing the Vienna model, Housing in the 21st Century, which was an exhibition and a series of events that took place in Dublin last April. In this series, we've been talking about what is the Vienna model, and what can we here in Ireland learn from it? We've been hearing about what cost rental is and how it can work in Ireland in cities like Dublin to create affordable homes. We also heard about the reimagining of Ballymun and the ways in which cooperative housing, co-housing models can provide affordable homes to buy, not rent, in a cost-effective use of public land. But what do those most affected and impacted by housing and homelessness think of all of this? So Eilish Comerford is a community development worker in St. Michael's Family Resource Centre in Inchicore. And Eilish is part of a grassroots action called Housing Action Now, Fair Rent Homes. And they're calling on the Irish government to implement a cost rental programme and urgently provide housing for the thousands who need it. And you know, St. Michael's Estate, where Eilish works, has been at the centre of a protracted and often delayed regeneration project since the 1990s. But it's now intended that cost rental homes will be built there. So for people like Eilish, it's been a very long road, even a battle, to get here.
It was earmarked in 1998 for regeneration, and that was, and the decision for regeneration was made by the local people who lived there at the time, and 286 families participated in the study that agreed for the decision for the whole area to be regenerated. To date, you're talking, this was 1998, to date there's only been two phases of that regeneration completed. You have to your left 50 homes over in Emma Crescent. And you have, just to on the left here, you have a senior citizen, state-of-the-art senior citizens complex with 50 homes. So in phase one, there was 100 homes built. The journey began after that in terms of what happens with the rest of the land. And since 2003, there's been three plans that have come and gone. Most notably, the public-private partnership plan, which was took a few years to design, but which collapsed spectacularly in 2008. And then we campaigned into this Family Resource Centre and the St. Michael's Regeneration Team. We had to campaign because really there was a lot of people left down by the collapse of the PPP plan. There were people left in half-empty blocks, so we had no choice but to go and stand by people and campaign for the next phase of development, which took a few years to happen. And Thornton Heights was the next phase, just behind us there. I would encourage people to go and have a look around, walk around Thornton Heights and get a sense of what it's like. That was completed in 2014. Then what was going to happen next? You know, there was a sense of that, well, from our perspective, the job wasn't done. We had an empty site to your left. And we, you know, we, the regeneration team and the Family Resource Centre, we felt, you know, that this is a great opportunity not to go back to the PPP route, but to develop this and to provide low-cost housing for people and for families in the area. Dublin City Council at that time were thinking about St. Michael's under this Housing Land Initiative. And from our perspective, that really was creating the conditions for mostly private development, which we felt very strongly that ordinary people wouldn't afford to live there and to purchase homes there. And our fear was you'd have big landlords coming in, or vulture funds coming in and buying blocks of homes, and therefore re-letting them out in the market and charging huge rents. So we kind of opposed, we really were ideologically opposed to that plan. So we went back to the drawing board as a group and said, began to look at other models. And that's how we heard about NESC and their work. And then we found out about Neary's work, their policy paper called Time for a Game Changer. We studied that and we sought advice about that. And in that was they were making the case for cost rental housing. And that's where we began to say, this actually is the best opportunity or the best type of development that could give low to moderate income families an opportunity to live in such a really valuable site here so near the city centre. Why was cost rental attractive to us? It was because we felt this is public land on the site. It's like the family silver, somebody referred to it before. So we have a site. It's a public site there on your left. You can see it when you leave. And we say, we believe if the state owns the land, we own it, and that if there's a cost rental housing built on the land will remain in public ownership and so will the properties. We believe from what we studied that the model would pay for itself over time. We know from the Austrian experience that it is top quality housing. So we believe Inchicore would benefit from quality housing and that people could live in Inchicore and thrive in this area. We believe if you take the Children's Hospital, if it ever happens, that the young professionals who we hope would come and work there, they could live in a site like this. It would provide them opportunities. And we know other local young people who are private renting in the Dublin 8 area would love to live in a site like this. So there was loads of reasons why. And we also felt very strongly that this option would take the burden off people who are paying over the top in the private rented system, which is unregulated to what we would argue it is. And it's insecure, as we know. The average sale price for a house in Dublin is £375,000. And in Inchicore, we just looked yesterday to buy a second home, would be €330,000. So it's outside the reach of what ordinary people can do. So if you're stuck and you have no choice but to go in the private rented, you're going to get absolutely paid astronomical rents. If you're trying to buy a house, sometimes now which you're having to get this deposit from the central bank, you may never get an opportunity to purchase a home with prices that are currently out there. So we were saying home ownership at the moment is neither, it could be neither an option or maybe neither a choice for a large number of people. That's why we argue for cost rental, because it will give people another solution, we would argue. Again, cost rental will afford people an opportunity, like in Inchicore, to live near the city, as is in the case of Vienna and Copenhagen. An awful lot of the citizens are able to live quite near the city. It will create the conditions, we believe, for a real and meaningful mix of people with different incomes, which we believe will create the conditions for more sustainable communities. It will bring other people who are currently over the threshold into the public housing system. And nationally, a fair rent home, cost rental home, will ensure that the state will meet its public housing targets. But the thing that was frustrating is that currently is, and some of the challenges are, you know, the speed. We need urgency. Because we feel this was launched last July and it feels like it's at a snail's pace for it to get to that stage to where you might have a real sort of plan where you can go back to people and look and do workshops or whatever. We do feel Dublin City Council are very, very much behind this from what we witnessed and the way they're working around it. We feel the Department of Environment are a bit slow in sort of their end. The other challenge is to the affordability issue. How do you genuinely keep the cost affordable, because it will not work if you're trying to create conditions for people with low and moderate incomes to live there, really keeping the cost. We believe either look for the EIB to get the loan over a longer period or frontline state subsidy towards the development to kickstart it off. So they're some of the challenges. If anyone from the housing department are here, from the Department of Environment, we're saying, please move, get going on your end, because we don't. It's 21 years since regeneration was flagged here. We don't want to have to wait 10, 15 years for this. I mean, I think if you can really do it here and do it really, really well and put all the resources and the best thinking in this site, you can actually win hearts and minds for it to be developed in other sites across the city and country. Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Well done. Well done indeed.
again no more than in Ballymun, you hear in the voices of people like Eilish Comerford the deep frustration with the long delays that so many regeneration projects have suffered, mainly because of the recession and the collapse of both exchequer spending and private investment. But again, as we heard before, that's one of the big differences between Austria and Ireland, in that at times of recession, Austria, unlike Ireland, is actually building more, not less. So our boom to bust housing cycle has badly hit poorer communities like Ballymun and St. Michael's Estate, where development is switched off by the exchequer and halted by the private sector. One solution is to change our funding model. So Eilish mentioned the EIB, the European Investment Bank, and its potential role in funding affordable homes. So Cormac Murphy is the CEO of the European Investment Bank, and he explored in these talks that fault line of our boom to bust housing cycle, which has defined the Irish market. And according to him, it's the new land development agency, the LDA, that is a game changer.
EIB is the Bank of the European Union. We do fund projects across Europe, so we've experienced with different models. And essentially, you know, the issue of housing is one that is particularly important in Ireland. Aside from anything else, Ireland is the European country with a growing population, or the fastest growing population. So aside from issues of backlog, issues of inward investment, development of Dublin as a centre, there is a much wider issue in terms of the availability of housing. On the other hand, Ireland is a country that's had a crisis, and you know, issues of affordability are taking place in a context that, you know, in 2011, the previous affordability policy was cancelled simply because housing was then viewed as affordable. So I think Ireland is characterised by a boom, and you know, there has been a bust, etc., etc., and the question of sustainability and having a model there that will deliver over time and basically deliver homes and deliver, you know, on housing needs and housing, you know, the right of housing is clearly very important. The EIB, of course, is a major funder of housing across Europe. Now, whether we call it social, affordable or low profit, but basically housing that is effectively being provided on non-market terms or being sponsored by the public sector. In the case of Dublin and Ireland, we're very interested in the cost rental model. We view that as having, you know, real scope in terms of a market at the moment, which, you know, essentially is 10% social housing, 90% private. The pattern in much of Europe, including in our nearest neighbour, the UK, is that, you know, essentially there is a wider spectrum of publicly assisted housing. I think the case of Vienna is not only relevant from the point of view of, you know, that long-term commitment and the success in terms of delivery of housing, but also in terms of attributes such as the attractiveness of a city and, you know, the wider urban discussion in terms of, you know, in a world of global capital, of migration, of investment, making a city as attractive as possible. The role of housing, mixed tenure, is clearly very important, and I think Vienna is an emblem of that in terms of how it scores on quality of life indices. So that is a very important part of things, and that highlights as well the role not just of housing, but also integrated with infrastructure. That's an area we're also very focused on. Future-proofing, not just the quality of housing, things like energy efficiency. This is also where, you know, a real difference can be made in terms of quality of housing, in terms of building, you know, effectively high-quality, future-proof, publicly supported housing. In terms of the model, we would view the role of the LDA as a game-changer. It represents effectively a decision to use public policy and public resources to support the delivery of housing. What we'd like to see, of course, and we're willing, you know, we're obviously have an appetite to support as much as possible that would be coming through in terms of size of projects of range and range of projects, and that would be very important. And it will also be very important that the first projects are, you know, a success that can be then built on. The role of finance is important. What we can provide is long-term, competitively sourced and set funding conditions. We're a AAA institution. We borrow in international bond markets. So we can bring that cheapest possible money and we can bring it to housing in Ireland. To some extent, the challenge, but also the upside, is that at the moment, we're effectively the social housing piece is, you know, largely funded by government in terms of, I think, over 90%. I mean, if you look at the level of rents compared to the level of overall payments into the system, the rents are quite a small portion. Once you kind of extend that spectrum and you have a higher portion of, you know, rents combined with public resources, you have greater flexibility as well in terms of so-called off-balance sheet structures. Now, I think cases like Vienna are also benefit from the fact that there is a historical cost in terms of the creation of the housing stock, and that means then the ability to charge rents that are at a certain level is obviously greater. There's greater flexibility. In terms of a kind of a widening of the non-profit, non-market housing solutions, does open the possibility of so-called off-balance sheet structures. And that will bring additional resources and to some extent a virtuous circle in terms of funding, in terms of the ability to fund, and in terms basically the momentum and the impulse to create portfolios and to allow the creation of future portfolios of housing. But I do think at a personal level, and particularly with Dublin, you know, I'd be quite bullish personally on Dublin in terms of the potential. There are also some international examples of cities that have done very well, but that has raised particular challenges. I think San Francisco would be an example of that in terms of homelessness, et cetera, et cetera. So to some extent, you know, there is a huge long-term benefit and payoff in terms of getting this right, in terms of the quality of life in the city, a quality of life for the individuals, and I think the payoff in terms of Ireland Inc., Dublin Inc., and, you know, essentially creating an environment that I think will be one that is as sustainable and as successful as possible. Thank you.
So that hope, albeit a little fearful of community leaders like Eilish Comerford and the bullish optimism of people like Cormac Murphy for change, is promising. But David Joyce, a solicitor with Mercy Law Resources Centre, who is working himself in housing and homelessness and comes from a traveller community, brought things right back to where we started with Michaela Kaur from Vienna, human rights.
Struck by the language that gets used in terms of commodity and planning for commodities, and that's what we've done with our housing system. We have a commodity, we have certain people in control of that commodity. I mean, it took until someone from Vienna spoke about housing as a right, and I think we have to a real game changer is a change in our philosophy as to what housing is. And housing is not a commodity. It is somewhere where people have to live, and it is somewhere that gives people protection and security and makes them feel part of societies and as people within societies. And that's what cities are. Cities are just societies that are larger, than towns or whatever. But, I mean, you know, we can't talk about Dublin and compare it to Vienna, because, you know, Dublin's happening all over the country. Dublin's not a phenomenon. Homelessness and shortage of land is not a phenomenon in Dublin because it's an urban metropolis. Same thing, they're happening in places like Navan, they're happening in places like much smaller areas. It's because who is controlling the actual land and property, that social housing and housing. And I come from, I'm not being radical about it here. I'm not sort of some sort of, even though, the first housing model this morning, mentioned in terms of Karl Marx house, The reality, we're talking about Dublin being 100 years behind Vienna. You have to remember that Dublin actually were head-to-head with Vienna from the 1919s and 1920s. We did the exact same thing as Vienna did. We had our slums. We had our outbreaks of dysentery and TB. Less than sort of, half a mile from where we're sitting. And we did the same thing as Vienna did. We rebuilt houses. We put people into better conditions. And we did that for at least 65 years. And then we went backwards. and we are probably now well behind Vienna in terms of our philosophy. I was also struck by the terminology, because in Vienna, you know, social housing is part of a culture, part of something that is normal in society. We've done exactly the opposite in Ireland over the last 35 years. We stigmatised those who live in social housing. We've stigmatised council estates. We've stigmatised people who come from council estates. I grew up in a council estate. I know the people in council estates. They are good people. And I think that's what we've done in this society. We stigmatise them when we put them behind. And the people who are now managing and in control of that have bought into that stigma and have actually created that. So now we talk about quantity. I have no difficulty with quantity. I have a problem with a false pretense and a false notion that we're going through some sort of, or heading towards some sort of social equality and social integration. We're not. We knocked down Ballymun and we gave it to private developers, and now the people living in Ballymun are still on the edges of Irish society because they're renting. They're renting back the same land and the same property that was owned by the state and was given away by the state because Ballymun was seen as some sort of social failure. People in Ballymun weren't a social failure. The infrastructure that went into Ballymun was a social failure. And we're going to repeat that for the next 50 years if our belief is somehow that social integration in housing is our model, is what our target is. The provision of homes as a right should be our target. And that's when we need to get it. Thank you very much.
No, it's all. Congratulations. David, thank you. Very important perspective as well.
David Joyce there, a solicitor and a board member of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission. Now, Rita Fagan is a lifelong community activist and leader. She's so well known in this sector. And like Eilish Comerford, she works with the people of St. Michael's Estate.
I've worked here 30 years on St. Michael's Estate, so I know the land. I feel like I own the land sometimes. If you take where this came from, it's come out of a socialist government back at that time, way years ago. So it came out of a place where people believed that housing was a human right. I believe that housing is a human right. It may not be in the constitution, but I don't believe that we should have over 10,000 people homeless and children who these people fought for living in hotels, or the people who live in the doorways in the city. So it's a whole different ball game at this moment in time. So listening, I believe it is a human right. And yesterday, Conor O'Toole of the ESRI, he talked about that they have studied people from 2012 up to 2016 in terms of what was their incomes, where was their incomes going. And the majority of those who were on 26,000 to 30,000, their incomes, the majority of their income was going on private accommodation or mortgage. And they were arguing that this was wrong, that there needs to be something different for that group of people. So while I believe that housing is a human right, I believe that outside of this, that the state, as you said there, should be building social housing anyway. We should be building on our land. We should be rising to the demands of what's out there. But this is a model, and it's a very important model. As I say, it comes into a part where the people who were over 38,000 of the 70,000, you know, they cannot get a mortgage and they cannot get on the housing list. So this allows them to come into it. To make a city, you have to have local people living in the city. And what's happening in a lot of our spaces, and it's all part of the new building of communities and things like that. If you take Thomas Street and the Liberties, I come from the Liberties, I live in the flats in the Liberties. But if you take that, at the moment we've had two sets of students' accommodation coming in. We've a lot of new economic benefits coming in. We've about four or five hotels coming in. And gradually local authority and the culture of the areas are being wiped out. So who owns the city and who is the city for, to me, matters. As a Dublin woman, my dad came from Christchurch. So that passes to the thing again, comes back to the land where you were talking about, well, whether private people handing over the land to this land agency would want any public people on it. Well, I don't think that that should be a principle, because we're looking at their Clancy Barracks. Clancy Barracks was to give over so many units, so they're giving them up at Fatima. So then that becomes a class issue. Who gets to live where in the city, you know, in the nicer parts of the land? Why can't it be an equal city? Why can't we have fairness in the city that if I wanted to live in Dundrum on that side, why couldn't I have the possibility of living there under cost rental or under social housing? Now, coming back to us, we're a bit worried. We're worried because there is no master plan yet. There is no financial plan yet for St. Michael's Estate. And yet the European Bank came here last July and we think that they want to give the money, so why can't we move on the money? We also know that people lived on that site, so there all the services are under that site. So it's not a big, huge thing to do. And what we're afraid is that there isn't really a political will to bring on this cost rental.
So why can't it be an equal city, a fairer city? Rita Fagan, a community leader, poses that question to us, pointing to the trend we've seen in social housing being segregated to some areas rather than others, creating a very socially and class-divided city. And you know that echoes for me something that Karen Ramser, who's the director of the City of Vienna's Housing Authority, said when she told me last year that one of the things she's most proud of in Vienna is that in her city, you can't tell someone's social status or income just by their address. Imagine that. So that's all from this, our final podcast in the series, The Vienna Model, Housing for the 21st Century. If you want to find out more, do go to the website, housingmodeldublin.ie. That's housingmodeldublin.ie. And if you'd like to hear that interview with Karen Ramser that I mentioned, check out our full podcast channel on thisiswherewelive.ie. Thanks so much for listening.